This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Listen to us on KPFK, KPFA, and other Pacifica affiliates, and watch us on Free Speech TV, Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. With just hours to go before election results begin rolling in, party control of the House and Senate is a big question. According to 538.com's Nate Silver, Democrats have a 50.2% chance of taking control of the U.S. Senate. And as we've discussed on this program in the past, how congressional districts are drawn greatly determines which party controls a seat. Republicans have very successfully redrawn districts in several key states over the years, very openly using a strategy of gerrymandering. Well, that's why President Obama, in a newly announced post-presidential plan, has decided to take on redistricting together with his former Attorney General Eric Holder. Most presidents hit the speaking circuit or start charitable foundations after their terms end. Mr. Obama and Mr. Holder will lead a newly formed group called the National Democratic Redistricting Committee. My guest is David Daly. He is the editor-in-chief of Salon, digital media fellow for the Wilson Center for Humanities and the Arts and the Grady School of Journalism and the University of Georgia. We had him on our program recently to talk about his new book, Rat Effed, the true story behind the secret plan to steal America's democracy. Welcome back to the show, David.
Always a pleasure, Sonali. Thanks for having me again.
So we talked about the big picture last time we had you on in terms of how we got to this place, how Republicans very openly decided to use gerrymandering as a political strategy. Now they have control of the House and the Senate. What should we look for in this year's election for how redistricting might be a factor in control of the Senate? Looks like the House is going to be very unlikely to be Democratic controlled, but at least the Senate.
Yes, I mean, the Senate certainly is not gerrymandered because it's a state-by-state
That's
process.
Right.
So the Senate seems like it's as close can be. If Nate calls it 50.2, I would believe that. I think a lot of people are feeling as if the Senate could even go 50-50 and that a Vice President Tim Kaine might be the tiebreaker. I would suggest that in past years, competitive Senate seats have tended to break the direction of the party having the bigger night. So in 2014, the competitive seats all broke towards the Republicans. In 2012, they all broke toward the Democrats. I don't think it will be as close as this. I think the Senate probably will fall to the Democrats. The House is a completely different story, and it's not because the popular will is going to be any different, but it's going to be because of the way these district lines are drawn. The Democratic vote gets essentially, you know, packed into fewer districts. This is a very conscious strategy. It is just about impossible to imagine how the Democrats can pick up the 30 seats they need. They have to gain 30 seats to take back control of the House. Most people think they can do somewhere between 13 and 17. So they will cut into it, but they won't get very far. They certainly won't hit muscle. Now, the important thing to keep in mind here is that you will have many, many hundreds of thousands more votes for Democratic candidates than Republican candidates in the House. But because of the way those votes are divvied up and drawn off, it's not going to make a difference in control of the chamber.
So in a way, you're saying that Democratic candidates and Democratic representatives win popular votes if you compare them to their Republican counterparts?
Yes. I mean, in 2012, there are 1.4 million more votes for Democratic House candidates than Republicans. And yet Republicans held the chamber 234 to 201. If the Republicans win back 13 seats tonight, if the Democrats win back 13 seats on the low end of that spectrum, but probably in the ballpark, that's what the margin will be again. Nothing will have changed. And this is because in state after state, states that are going to vote for Hillary Clinton for the presidency, states that may elect Democratic governors and Democratic senators, they're going to return wildly Republican congressional majorities. So a state like Pennsylvania, which is not a swing state. It's gone blue every year since 1988. Patrick Toomey, the U.S. senator there, is in deep, deep trouble. But there's not a single competitive congressional seat there. As it is right now, the state's 18 seats are 13-5 Republican. It's going to stay that way. North Carolina, Hillary Clinton favored to win. Their very unpopular governor, Pat McCrory, likely to lose. Even U.S. Senator Richard Burr, a two-term incumbent, is in the danger zone. But is a single congressional incumbent in danger? No. That state is going to remain 10-3 Republican.
Wow.
It's not because the voters in this state want to elect Republicans. It's because of the way these lines distribute those voters in order to maximize the number of Republicans that can be elected from any given state. And this will have serious consequences. You already hear Republicans in Congress, and I'm not only talking about Tea Partiers, but, you know, some of the more sensible veterans types are already throwing around investigations and impeachment even. And we haven't even had the election yet. And there are folks talking about high crimes and misdemeanors. This is deeply undemocratic, that a body of Congress, the body that is supposed to be most responsive to the people, is not only insulated from the people in such a way that control can't be taken back despite a huge majority of votes, but that minority can then go on many years of investigations and even leading to an impeachment, potentially. This is very dangerous.
So a future President Clinton, if that's how the election turns out, would be dominated by a Republican-dominated House who would foist all sorts of things on her, like they've done to Obama, and all of it based on skewed boundaries that they have basically taken over. And let's just remind our audience, this is something that gets to happen only every 10 years, right? So the next time those lines would have to be redrawn or could be redrawn would be 2020?
If the Republicans do not lose the House tonight, which I don't think they will, they certainly will not lose it in 2018, which is a midterm election year in which Democrats traditionally don't come out, but also the party in power tends to not do as well in midterm years. They tend to be backlash years. So if the Democrats can't pull off a miracle tonight, Hillary Clinton is likely to face a Republican House of Representatives for the entirety of her first term. Nothing can be done about this until 2020 after the census, so the next redistricting, the next remapping will happen in 2021, which means that the 2020 election becomes very important as well, because the Republicans are only a White House victory away from having complete control of the government. That's what this redistricting has locked in. It's essentially given them complete control of the House of Representatives for the full decade.
Wow. Okay, so let's talk about the fact that President Obama clearly sees this as a huge issue to work on, so much so that he announced in mid-October that he was going to make it the focus of his post-presidential political activity to oversee, along with Eric Holder, his first attorney general, the National Democratic Redistricting Commission. Is this wise on the part of our Democratic leaders like Holder and Obama?
Absolutely. It's a sign of how important this is. There are a lot of people in journalism and in political science who try and underestimate the importance of gerrymandering in these district lines. The fact that the president of the United States is going to come out and say this is really important and everybody needs to listen up to this, I think might drive home exactly how important gerrymandering is. We need presidential level leadership, and nobody in America probably understands exactly what this means, quite like the President of the United States, who for the last 6 years has essentially had his domestic agenda impeded and obstructed by Republicans in the House. In many ways, Barack Obama's domestic agenda that came to a screeching halt on election night in 2010 when Republicans took back the House and never lost it for the rest of his presidency, and it's been a real veto check for all of these years. So lots and lots of sensible things that the country has common ground on that didn't happen as a result. Instead, we got government shutdowns and we got brinksmanship over the debt ceiling and, 50 some odd votes on repealing Obamacare. And we did not see any of the progress on climate change or immigration or any of the things that on guns, on any of the things that I think that this president might have liked to have done.
How is this democratic effort, as far as you can tell, going to try to make the process fairer, right? Because what the Republicans have done may be unethical, but it's legal.
It's perfectly legal. The question is, how will the Democrats try and fight it? I mean, if the Democrats only try to run the same play that the Republicans did in 2010 and 2011, I don't think it will work very well. For one thing, Republicans usually have more money to spend on things like this, and the Republicans have already said that they're going to run Red Map 2, which is what they called their plan in 2010, and that they've got $125 million lined up for it. The Democrats have already committed $75 million to what they're calling Advantage 2020. So the Democrats are going to be outspent. They're not going to have the element of surprise that worked so well in the Republican favor back in 2010 when the Democrats didn't see this coming. And they still have to do the impossible job of winning on these tilted maps. I mean, the Democrats have had every imaginable break fall their way this year. You have the least popular major party presidential nominee ever in Donald Trump, who they are running against, and they still can't probably find a way to take back the House. So if they can't do it in 2016, it's a little bit tricky to imagine how they're going to pull it off in 2020. So if the Democrats simply try to repeat what the Republicans did, I don't think it's going to work very well. I think what this takes is an appeal to people's sense of democracy, of fairness, some real leadership, a real national conversation on what this means. It means real public education. Gerrymandering is the thing that made our eyes glaze over in eighth grade civics class. But it's at the root of why our politics are so extreme and broken and dysfunctional. And it will really take leadership and a public conversation to make people see this. I don't think the answer is hundreds of millions of dollars spent in a real arms race that turns even our statehouse races so expensive that, regular people can't run in them.
Now, Republicans have only managed to take control of redistricting lines where they basically controlled the legislature. And we talked about this last time, but you have some states that are trying to go the other way. For example, in California, I believe it was in 2010 that a ballot measure was passed to have an independent commission formed with something like five Democrats, five Republicans, and then four independents to form this independent commission to redraw district lines in California. They're about halfway through the process in this state. And this commission took it upon themselves to very clearly say unanimously that they will not let any data that may show how political lines are redrawn impact their decision-making on congressional lines. Like, California is actually a Democratic state, generally falls largely blue with certain big exceptions in certain parts of the state. As far as you can tell, what has California ended up with using what seems to be a fairer way of drawing lines?
I think independent commissions have a mixed record. Some of them have performed really well. Some of them have simply found new ways to sneak partisanship into the process. California, to me, seems to be on the stronger end. And I think it is because it demands such involvement and participation of the people who are doing this. The folks who are chosen to actually draw these lines go through a really comprehensive application process. They have to write essay questions. It's like applying to college. It's a really formidable and serious task, and the people who end up being part of it, I think take it very, very seriously. And as a result, you have seen much more competitive races in California you have as many competitive races in California this year as you have, you know, in many other parts of the entire country. There are a handful of Republican incumbents at Tuesday night who are in interesting trouble. And you have seen more incumbents lose. You've seen more incumbents say, you know, I don't think I want to run this year. There's been more turnover in California's congressional delegation in the last few years because of this, and new voices, and a different kind of representation. It's worked out really well. I think Arizona, on the other hand, is one of those states where you've simply seen the partisanship kind of seep in the back door. Florida, certainly, where they passed constitutional amendments mandating fair districts and no partisan involvement in the process.
Again, I understand Ohio is also considering a ballot measure for a couple of years.
Ohio has passed a ballot measure. I mean, these things pass, and they're really, really popular whenever they are allowed onto the ballot. I mean, they're so popular that politicians in some states have said, we're not going to let you even have ballot initiatives on redistricting. We are keeping this power entirely for ourselves. But this is the way to do it. I mean, people want their elections to be fair. You see it this year and all the talk about rigged elections. People want this democracy to work. And when you can explain this in a way that it's not about partisanship, it's about elections mattering, it's about votes counting, then you see red states, blue states, whether it's Ohio or Florida or Arizona or California, these things pass, and they pass big.
Certainly, elections are rigged in many ways, but not in the ways that politicians usually admit to, especially Republicans. If anything, they often tend to be, at least on the district level, rigged in favor of Republicans.
Indeed,
where Republicans
right.
have had their done their work. Well, David, thank you so much for joining us today. We'll see how this election turns out. Thanks so much.
I appreciate it. Always a pleasure. Thank you.
David Daly is the editor-in-chief of is an editor-in-chief of Salon, Digital Media Fellow for the Wilson Center for Humanities and the Arts and the Grady School of Journalism at the University of Georgia. He's also the author of the book Rat Effed, The True Story Behind the Secret Plan to Steal America's Democracy. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. We're also on Twitter at twitter.com/RUWithSonali.